This is the Education Gadfly Show.
Amber, have you been to Wisconsin?
No.
Michael's home state?
I have. I've been to the Mall of America.
That's Wrong Minnesota.
It's all the same.
Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming my co-host, the original cheesehead of education policy, Michael Brickman.
Glad to be here.
All right. So, Michael, welcome to the show and to Fordham. Listeners, very exciting news here. Michael Brickman is new to us as our national policy director. Previously was Governor Scott Walker's education policy advisor.
That's right. That's right. Moved out here just less than a week ago and really excited to be here.
I know. You know, actually, Michael even snapped a picture of the Ohio highways for me on the way, to which I responded, of course, keep your hands on the wheel.
I was safely pulled over on the side of the road.
Okay.
Just getting gas.
Yes, gotcha. All right.
Definitely
good.
Would not text and drive.
So Michael, you know, Wisconsin is a big education reform state, or at least was once upon a time in the early 90s, mid-90s. A lot of charter school action, a lot of voucher action. And then sort of was kind of, frankly, seen as pretty much a big old lame old state for a while. But it's coming back. It's coming back. A lot of action there with Governor Walker. In fact, on your first day here at Fordham, we had protesters outside our office from the Wisconsin Teachers Union.
Sadly, we were not so lucky.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
I couldn't
make it.
That would have been awesome. Yeah,
so would have been nice. Would have been nice to see some of my old friends from the Wisconsin State Capitol out here, but I miss them dearly.
Was it hard to do your work with people shouting outside your office? Was it literally loud? Like it was distracting in that way? Did you have to go find a coffee shop to work out of or something?
No, we just kind of dealt with it. It was about probably 2 months or so of people stopping by and banging on our window. I had a ground floor window office during the protest, so it was pretty interesting. But
earphones, nothing.
Yeah, definitely earphones. Definitely left every day with a headache.
Wow, a headache,
people.
Loud a headache.
I
hear that, Wisconsin teachers? Huh?
Got a headache.
How do you feel now?
Education reform.
Headache for education reform. I love it. The commitment. All right, so. We've got a lot to do today. We are back to school. It is full swing back to school season. I should say my own son starts kindergarten on Monday. We get to go check out his school on Friday. We're going to find out who his teacher is soon. Of course, as soon as I get that name, I'm going to stalk her and I say her because, you know, it's an elementary school. I mean, all the teachers, I think, are female in my kid's school. So that, you know, that is not, I mean, I can be gender specific here because that's just the fact.
Just generalizing.
But I can go find out. I'm going to see, like, you know, is she on Facebook? Is she on, you know, what can I find out about his teacher online, huh? Mostly, all I've been able to find out so far about the teachers at his school are on Pinterest, where I can see which kind of lesson plans they're pinning to their Pinterest pages. It tells you a lot. It's interesting. I'm getting stares around the room here like this is not okay to stalk teachers. Wait till you have your own kid. Okay, now let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Tennessee is considering a policy where teachers will have to show that they are improving student achievement or lose their license. Arnie Duncan approves. Is this a move forward or is it more complicated?
No, here, Michael, you guys got a teacher evaluation system in Wisconsin tied to student achievement. This takes it another step forward, right, and says that for relicensure, you've got to show achievement gains.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't this just a recipe for getting teachers to teach obsessively to the test?
Well, and only certain teachers. This would only be for teachers who actually have a test that applies to their grade and their subject level. So it really kind of depends what type of teacher you are. I think it's definitely good to be holding teachers accountable for results, and we'll get to polling later, but that's something the parents want, something the general public wants. But really, when it comes to having high stakes decisions like this, you want some human input, I think. I think you don't want to totally just leave it up to what the computer spits out.
Well, that's the question. I mean, so I'll admit, I don't know enough about what's happening in Tennessee to know how they are conceptualizing student achievement. I mean, we're just looking at value-added scores, and that is it. Is there something more nuanced that they're looking at? Is it the broader teacher's evaluation? I mean, my big fear for all of these kinds of reforms is that we do it in a formulaic way, that we encourage behavior that we don't really want to encourage. Like, you know, teaching to bad tests, which is what we've got right now, are bad tests. And that it's all in this, you know, where we're saying, you know, and something like this is clearly not about feedback. This is clearly about trying to go after bad teachers and make it harder for them to stay in the classroom, which is a noble thing to do. But if we think that's 5% of the teachers, you know, and we're going to piss off 95% of the teachers along the way, I'm not sure if it's worth it.
Yeah, and it seems like the Tennessee plan really is about going after some of the really lowest performing teachers in the state. But I think you're right. I think all teachers will see this as a threat on some level because they're being evaluated based on a formula. It's something that they try their best to control, but and they do get a number of chances under this system. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it seems like for some teachers, there's really this kind of opens up a new world of really basing things on one standardized test.
All right, good. Yeah. By the way, Michael, I'm thinking about these yelling teachers. You know, you're sitting right next to Checker Finn right now. So if you happen to start hearing him yell, you could use those earphones too. But do let me know if you're going home with a headache. I mean, nobody here at Fordham should be going home with a headache, right?
So far, so good.
We'll just tell Checker to simmer it down a little bit if we have to. All right, topic number two.
Several polls released this week show that most parents and most Americans haven't heard of the Common Core. What's the takeaway for supporters?
Common Core? What Common Core? Right. So what do you think, Michael? I mean, what a majority of people, I think they said, have never heard of the Common Core. And then when the pollsters kind of described it to them, then people said, yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, they like the concept. But the problem is, even of the people who said they knew what the Common Core was, a lot of them, if you just asked them some basic facts, really kind of didn't. And that's part of the problem and some of the misconceptions that we're seeing generally on the Common Core. But it's also, it shows that there's, if support, and it seems like there is some support for the Common Core, pretty much across the board, it might not be the firmest support because people just don't know that much about it yet. But I think once it starts to really trickle down to local schools and to parents, kids actually being taught new and different information based on the Common Core, I think that's really when it's going to hit home from people. And I think people will get a deeper understanding of what it really means for them.
You know, I've seen some back and forth on all these polling numbers and information coming out this week. And what you tend to get, I think it was Suzanne Tachny at the Pi Network that wrote this, and I thought it was really perceptive, was that, first of all, you know, most parents, most taxpayers just assume that this stuff is already going on, you know, that we would have standards, that we'd be testing kids, that there'd be an accountability system, that the standards would measure things that matter, you know, that the standards would be common across the country. I mean, that you sort of have to explain to people, like, okay, what's the big deal about the Common Core? You have to give so much information because the people would just assume that this is common sense. I mean, of course we have this stuff happening already, don't we? Now, that said, we know there is a growing and a vocal opposition out there. And in the political system we live in today, that might be enough for some states to pull back on Common Core or Common Core testing. I mean, you were there in Wisconsin. You had a strong Tea Party movement. You worked for a governor who was able to unite the Tea Party folks with the more business mainstream types in the Republican Party. But, you know, the Tea Party anger around the Common Core is a serious threat, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think if you look at the numbers that we discussed, the part of the problem is people don't know a lot about it because it's not one of their top issues. People are focused on the economy. Immigration's a big issue right now. There are other issues that are getting the public's attention, and Common Core just isn't there yet. So if there's a small minority who really do care about the Common Core and they don't like it, in some states that might be enough for some politicians to kind of pump the brakes a little bit.
You gotta get those Tea Party types focused on something else other than the Common Core. Let's work on that. I think that should be our project.
Brainstorming session.
Yeah, we should come up with a great name for that. It's top secret project where we, you know, that we get other some other issue to come on the scene that just, you know, takes. I mean, immigration's, you know, that's out there, but of course that's really like the federal level, not at the state level. So we need a good state level issue that could really distract them. Michelle, work on that. Okay, topic number three.
Two GOP lawmakers in Wisconsin have introduced an accountability bill that's been 2 years in the making, but our own Adam Emerson expresses concern that the anti-voucher state school superintendent Tony Evers has too much power under the legislation. Brickman, is this accountability or politics at play in the Badger State?
So what's the idea here? We're already schools, private schools in Wisconsin that take the vouchers have to take the state tests. So is this what about more reporting or possibly closing down or saying to private schools that don't get good enough results, we're not going to keep funding you?
So they the school report cards that right now are for the public schools in the state do measure test scores, but they also measure other things like attendance. And we certainly talked about growth versus proficiency, and that's kind of baked into this accountability system.
Body mass index, is that on there for kids?
Not yet, but...
No. For teachers? No?
Once the soda bans come, you never know.
All right. Anyways, yeah. All right. Go ahead. Yes.
So, you know, right now, yes, you're correct. The voucher schools do take the state assessment, but there's an issue with reporting all that data out to the state.
Yeah.
And providing some feedback and creating essentially a grade for each of the voucher schools. That's something that I think most people agree should be out there. If parents are making a choice, it should be an informed choice. But the question is, then what happens if you fail persistently? Mm-hmm. And I think there's general agreement on that eventually you want to deal with the public schools and either turn them around or close them or convert them into charters. But it's a little bit trickier with the voucher schools. Mm-hmm. And
But why is it tricky? You just turn off the money. You just say, I mean, you can't shut them down necessarily. They're private, you know, if they're accredited. But you could just say, all right, we're not going to keep sending public dollars into failing private schools.
Well, and that's a little bit more controversial, but I think a lot of the players do agree that eventually, given the right circumstances, given the right levels of accountability, failing schools should not be in the system, whether they're public schools, charter schools, choice, or voucher schools. The problem is in Wisconsin, Superintendent Evers, who we've been able to work with on a number of issues we did in Wisconsin on reading, on teacher effectiveness, on the school accountability system. But the question is, for someone like him who's expressed pretty strong reservations about voucher schools themselves, he's called them at one point immoral. How much oversight should there be over this constitutionally separate office that would have pretty much unilateral authority to create a formula? And we've seen how that can go awry. We want to make sure that there's overall fair system, I think.
Right. So the worry is you empower Tony Evers and he creates a system whereby, oh my goodness, all of the private schools get an F grade and therefore don't get the voucher money. Very interesting. So, you know, this is like so many things, Michael. I feel like there's always there's the policy issue, right? Like, okay, should voucher schools have school report cards and be held accountable, right? We have those debates. But then there's always the secondary issue, which is who gets to decide and who do you trust, you know? And is it the feds? Is it the states at the state level? Is it the legislature or the superintendent, the local school district? That's what so many of these battles are always about. Okay, that's all the time we've got for Pardon the Gadfly. Now it's time for everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Welcome back to the show, Amber.
Thanks, Mike.
Amber, have you been to Wisconsin, Michael's home state?
I have. I've been to the Mall of America.
That's wrong Minnesota.
It's all the same. Midwest, flyover country.
Can we edit that out, Joe?
Amber, I cannot believe you. Now, come on. Amber is not some East Coast elitist. She's got that great Southern accent.
No,
she understands.
Not at all.
Oh, the Minnesota-Wisconsin mistake. It was a Great Lakes state. It's close.
I can't believe it.
Sorry.
We both have a lot of lakes. We eat food that's terrible for us.
Right.
It's beautiful in the summer. Just don't go in February.
Okay. I don't think I will.
That's not where you're going on your honeymoon.
Jamaica.
You got one more week. And then, all right, we'll celebrate next week. We'll talk about the wedding next week.
Good.
Yes. And the education reform implications thereof.
Yes, absolutely. We'll figure out what those are.
Okay. Excellent. All right. So what do you have for us this week?
We got the new EdNext survey. This is annual. It's this nationally representative survey of the American public around education. Teachers, parents, and minorities are oversampled. I love this survey. I mean, I'm going to have a really hard time. We'll try to do five, but promise we can like banter at the end because I've got two more I really want to get in.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
That's cheating. That's called cheating, Michael.
Sounds like more than a minute.
Amber does not stick to a minute.
I've been really generous with my minute. Anyway, let me not delay here. 2/3 of Americans favor adoption of Common Core. We know this. Yet the share of opposition is increasing 7% last year to 13% this year. 60% of the public favors federal funding of of pre-K for low and moderate income kids, around 73% of teachers favor it. Declining support for spending more money on schools. So if respondents were told about the spending level, we're not told, about 53% support more funding, which is down from 63% a year ago. If they're told, that number went down to 43%.
Wait, so it says if they are told first how much their local school district actually spends,
it's 43.
Then the support drops. Gotcha.
That's right.
Okay. But even without that, there's less support for increasing spending
from
than
a
year ago.
Year. That's
okay.
Right.
People
and
are.
They saw the same thing with teacher salary data. People want teachers
to
spend more. All right, jumping ahead.
Y'all are interrupting my minute, by the way. The public estimates that expenditures average $6,600 per pupil. Teachers think it's $6,000, roughly half of the $12,600 average actual expenditure. Wow. Similar pattern, like Michael was saying, because that's for teachers. 55% support more pay for teachers when not told of their average salaries. That's actually down from 64% a year ago, so still down. When told, 37% support an increase. All right, I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this. The annual actual salary for teachers, Mike, you know this, it's around $56,000, $57,000, okay?
Okay.
Teachers think it's how much?
$45,000.
Boom. Actual teachers. The public overall thinks it's, what do you think?
Probably a little bit higher.
$40,000?
$35,000. Yeah. African Americans think it's, keep going down.
$29,000.
I think I told you that earlier.
You told me that earlier.
And Hispanics think it's $26,000. So, wow. All right, last little factoid. Support and opposition for charters is a sort of a wash. Support in the last year grew from 43 to 51%. Opposition increased 16 to 26%. So we had sort of growth on both ends. And they attribute this to more people don't mark neutral anymore. More folks mark neutral last year. Anyway, I'll stop there. But really neat stuff. But dig into the tables, if you're interested in it, and not just read the summary.
Yeah. Now, Amber, you've decided out of the three polls that came out this week to focus on education next.
Yes.
Was there a reason?
I love the question where you're not given the information, then you are given. And you like that too. And then you are given the information.
Yeah.
And you see these changing attitudes. All right. So the one I didn't have time. Okay. 56% of teachers say unions have a positive effect on schools. 31 say negative.
Interesting.
So, hey, that's growing, right?
Yeah.
The public is split. 32% positive, 43 negative, 25 neutral.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
You know, the teachers, we know there's a lot of Republican teachers out there, right? And you know, particularly in the South, teachers who are not members of unions. And so, that's not terribly surprising to me. What stands out, first of all, this information on teacher salaries, the fact that Latino, Hispanic families say they think that teachers are only making $26,000 a year. Now, clearly that reflects the fact that most Hispanic families don't make very much money. Median income for Hispanics, I saw the other day, $31,000. I think. But you know, African Americans don't guess much higher. You say, oh my gosh, if we want to get minority parents fired up about education reform, one way is to help them understand how much money teachers are making.
Right.
And to say, if you think that your teacher, that the teachers are teaching your child is not working hard or is not, giving you what you need or giving your child what you need, just keep in mind, there's a good chance they're making $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, which, to these parents sounds like a fortune.
Yeah,
plus benefits, usually.
Well, plus, that's right, Michael. I mean, that's right. Very, very generous benefits compared to any other sector, right? 25-30%, if not higher.
The teachers, though, I feel like should know that. They should probably check their paycheck or something.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. The teachers thought it was so low. Well, do they sometimes think about starting salaries versus, I don't know how that goes down.
Yeah, and it's not a lot, those benefits aren't rolled up in that salary either a lot of times.
Now, but let's talk about pre-K also, right? Mm-hmm. Did you say 70% support federal funding for pre-K?
Teachers.
Okay.
60% of the public.
60% of the public, which means certainly that must include Republicans in that mix. And so
they put moderate. I would kind of wish they designed the survey question a little, because they put low and moderate.
Low and moderate.
Yeah, so you wonder if it would have changed if they just had moderate and then low.
That's interesting. But look, this is what President Obama's proposal more or less is. And it's interesting. We all say it was dead on arrival in the House. And yet it's very popular popular idea. You know, people across
like
the spectrum.
Free stuff.
What kid?
People
right?
like free
what
stuff.
What parent doesn't want their kids? Well, look, education paid for.
And I will say that, you know, in terms of making investments and sort of anti-poverty programs, you know, something around preschool makes a lot of sense. You know, it would be a better investment than a lot of what we're wasting our money on, in my view. But, you know, the politics are such that that's still not going to go anywhere.
And a lot of these middle-income kids are already getting access to these programs. Yeah. There's already, we have survey data that shows that. So, you know, like, what need are we filling for those parents at least?
Well, and as the surveys show, people have no idea what this stuff costs, so they don't realize how much their taxes are going to go up.
Well,
except,
right.
well, it'll be deficit spending, so that's a whole
that's
different
right.
story. But
yeah,
they don't really know what this means to them.
Yeah.
All right, one more. Sorry, I'm just so
No, please, please.
The completely opposed vouchers, okay? That was a survey question. So you are like, hate these things, right?
Right.
54% of teachers are that vehement about vouchers. All right, what do you think it is for Hispanics? Completely opposed.
Completely opposed Hispanics, I don't know, 20%?
40.
9%.
Wow.
Okay, so, I mean, just amazing to me that teachers, being a former teacher, are that vehemently against vouchers.
It's so interesting to me that they are still so much more against vouchers than charter schools when... Clearly, charter schools now represent a much greater threat. Right?
That's
in almost
right.
every state. I mean, okay, Wisconsin, there's actually a big voucher program. But in most places, right, the schools that are taking kids and their money and all that kind of stuff, it's charter schools.
Right.
So there must be, I mean, what is it? Is it, it is something about this public versus private, or is it the religious thing? What is it?
I know. Or is it just...
I think it could be. I mean, teachers see charter schools, they're public schools after all.
Yeah.
But do most teachers necessarily see themselves moving from a public school to a private school? Maybe not.
And to be fair, there's a religious thing. There's also the selection, right? Mm-hmm. People just say, look, if you have a school that gets to have admissions requirements and selected students, it shouldn't be public.
That's right.
Now, of course, there are those pesky magnet schools That's and exam right. schools out there that that confound that.
And
but
there's another survey that's asked teachers, you know, how many of them are sending their kids to private schools, and it's a pretty decent percentage.
Right.
So.
Right.
And not all voucher schools are selective. A lot of them are lottery-based.
All right, we got to dig into this. This is interesting. It really is. It seems like one of those, almost a knee-jerk kind of thing.
Yeah.
But there's something there.
Something there.
All right. Fascinating stuff. Thank you, Amber.
That was my research 5 minutes.
Your research 5 minutes. Michael, thank you for joining us for your first time on the show. Many more to come. Until next week.
This is Michael Brickman.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.